Republican lawmakers continue to question some of former President Clinton's last-minute pardons, including that of fugitive financier Mark Rich. President Clinton issued 140 pardons and 36 commutations in the last days of his presidency. But one act which has received little attention was the commutation of the death sentence of David Ronald Chandler. He was the first person sentenced to death under the 1988 federal drug kingpin law. President Clinton commuted Chandler's sentence to life in prison. The government's main witness has recanted his trial testimony in a case which has raised questions about how well the federal drug kingpin law is working. NPR's Eric Westervelt reports.
In late November of 1988, outgoing President Ronald Reagan capped 8 years of anti-drug crusading by signing the Anti-Drug Abuse Act into law. Among other provisions, the law established a federal death penalty for so-called drug kingpins who kill or order killing to further their business. President Reagan called it a new sword and shield in the escalating battle against drugs and signed the bill in his wife's honor.
Nancy, for your tireless efforts on behalf of all of us and the love you've shown the children in your Just Say No program, I thank you and personally dedicate this bill to you, and with great pleasure, I will now sign the anti-drug.
But the first person convicted under the drug kingpin statute was no Pablo Escobar or big-time narco-trafficker the Reagan administration had warned about. It was David Ronald Chandler. Ronnie, as he's called, grew marijuana in a small town in rural northeast Alabama. Chandler's lawyer, Jack Martin.
He didn't even do this full-time. He continued to work in his construction business, which he owned, and built houses. This was, extra income for him.
A look at the Chandler case highlights the often wide gap between idea and reality in America's ongoing drug war. Ronnie Chandler's case was not exactly what the government had in mind when the Get Tough law was passed. Chandler's sister-in-law, Michelle Chandler.
There were no Uzi welding guards protecting his crops that you see in these large cartels. And this is what the law was written for, was for the big-time, truly drug kingpins. And Ronnie is so far from that. You know, if Ronnie's a drug kingpin, I'm the Queen of England.
Yet for prosecutors in Alabama, Chandler fit the bill. He ran a mid-sized pot operation in Piedmont, a town of about 5,000 people. He grew an estimated 300 pounds of pot every year. Not tiny, but no Medellin cartel either. A federal jury convicted Chandler on drug dealing, and he received a death sentence for soliciting the 1990 murder of an associate-turned-informant named Marlon Schuler. Prosecutors said Chandler offered his brother-in-law, Charles Ray Jarrell, $500 to kill Schuler because he threatened to blow the whistle on his pot-growing operation. But the players in this are all related. You see, the victim and shooter were brothers-in-law as well. So defense attorneys say the homicide was not a drug murder for hire, but a sordid, long-running family feud which didn't involve Chandler. Jarrell had already tried to kill his brother-in-law, Schuler, twice before for physically abusing his sister and his mother, who lived with the Schulers. At trial, Jarrell testified that he and Schuler had argued and fought several times prior to the murder. One day, Jarrell, his son, and Schuler went to a nearby lake for beer and gunplay, shooting at bass and tree stumps. Jarrell had downed a case of beer when he turned his handgun on Schuler, shooting him fatally. The state murder charge was dropped against Jarrell and his son in exchange for his agreement to testify against Chandler in the federal murder-for-hire trial. But today, the government's main witness says he lied on the stand to save himself and his son from a death sentence. Jarrell is serving 25 years for selling marijuana. He wasn't available for a prison interview, but an attorney says he stands by his comments he made to CBS News' 60 Minutes in 1996.
If the government kills Ron Chandler, they've killed innocent men. I mean, I belong here. I know I belong here. But Ron Chandler, he don't belong in prison.
President Clinton evidently thought Chandler didn't belong on death row anyway. After 11 years in death row isolation, Clinton commuted Chandler's sentence to life without parole. Again, attorney Jack Martin.
Charles Ray Jarrell killed him in an impulsive, drunken act. That's a tragedy. But Ronnie Chandler had nothing to do with it. I believe that what Mr. Jarrell says now makes sense. He had every motive to lie at the time of trial. He has no motive to lie now. Indeed, the fact that he's telling the story that he tells now puts him in tremendous peril. They could prosecute him for the murder, could reject his plea agreement where he got a 25-year sentence instead of a life sentence or even death sentence.
But Chandler's legal options are limited as he tries to prove he's innocent of the murder for hire charge. Jailhouse recantations are commonplace, and courts are extremely reluctant to overturn a jury verdict because of recanted testimony. And there is no physical evidence in the Chandler case. It all rests on Jarrell's testimony. To some, the Chandler case highlights deep flaws in the kingpin law. Critics say it's so wide open and vague, prosecutors can pick and choose aspects of the law to tailor a kingpin where none exists. Under the law, it's relatively easy to prove someone is a kingpin. First, there has to be proof of three or more criminal violations of federal narcotics laws. That usually means just three separate drug deals, which fits just about anyone selling drugs. And you have to prove that there were five or more people involved in the operation. In the Chandler case, that was a bit of a stretch. Most of the people prosecutors called operatives, Chandler's family says, were friends or relatives who helped seasonally to bring in the crop. Finally, you have to prove substantial income from drug sales. But there's no hard dollar figure. A kingpin could make, say, $10,000, a relatively small sum in the drug trade. Chandler's sister-in-law, Michelle, charges that politically ambitious prosecutors pushed hard to get a murder-for-hire charge so they could be the first out of the gate to use the new federal statute. She says the idea Ronnie Chandler would offer a few hundred dollars to kill someone who knew about his marijuana operation is ludicrous. She says he would have had to take out far more than one person in this tiny Alabama community.
This is a small town. Half of the people in this town grow pot or use it. It is true that Marlon Shuler did know of the drug operation, but half of the people in this town knew about the operation. Law enforcement did not need Marlon Shuler's testimony against Ronnie Chandler to indict Ronnie on drug charges.
But Joseph Hubbard sees it differently. Now District Attorney for Alabama's Calhoun and Claiborne counties, Hubbard helped prosecute the federal case against Chandler. He calls the Clinton commutation unwarranted interference in the judicial process. And for Hubbard, the Chandler case shows that the kingpin law is working just fine, even if Chandler was an extremely small fish in the international drug trade.
The victim is still just as dead, whether it's a victim of Ronnie Chandler's request or whether he's a victim of the Medellin cartel's request. And he's dead because somebody was an organizer, an owner, or a supervisor of a drug operation in which at least five people were involved. And I don't see where one victim is worth more than the other just because he's the victim of a big operation and another victim is the victim of a smaller operation.
Before President Clinton granted him a commutation, Chandler was one of five prisoners on federal death row sentenced under the 88 Kingpin Law. Death penalty expert Paul Cassell teaches law at the University of Utah. He says it's not surprising that the Kingpin Law has largely been used against just a few people who are relatively small players.
On any statute, you're always going to find it used more often against, let's say, mid-level drug traffickers than against the very, very top of the organization, just because it's much more difficult to get the kind of evidence to convince a jury to convict. So I don't think that's evidence that the statute is failing. It may just be a bow to the real-world fact that it's easier to get someone who's lower down in the organization.
Despite complaints about misapplication, there are no signs lawmakers will change the Kingpin Law to better reflect the differences in scale, as some defense attorneys have called for. In fact, Congress strengthened the act in 1994 by significantly increasing the number of death-eligible offenses. And federal prosecutors are finding creative ways to expand the law's reach. In a potentially precedent-setting case, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Baltimore recently used the Kingpin Law to successfully prosecute two men who supplied drug dealers with paraphernalia. Baggies, scales, and 28,000 pounds of a commercial sweetener used to cut raw heroin for street sale. It marked the first time the government made drug kingpins of people who didn't directly sell drugs. When they're sentenced later this month, both men face federal mandatory minimums of 20 years to life. Eric Westervelt, NPR News.